Dana Johansson is RNZ sports correspondent. She's in the Auckland studio. Kia ora, Dana.
Kia ora, Catherine.
Now, athletics to become the first sport to offer prize money for Olympic gold medalists. For some reason, I find this controversial. And then you stop and think, hang on a moment, these athletes in different formats are earning prize money, they're full-time. Is it the Olympic thing?
Yeah, it has proved strangely controversial. I think some people see it as a kind of affront to Olympic ideals. Of course, it's sort of grounded in these amateur roots. But yes, I think that time has long since passed. I mean, the International Olympic Committee, they redistribute hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue to the international federations that are Olympic sports every year. It kind of seems only fair that some of that winds back up in the pockets of the athletes. So, yes, World Athletics making quite a bold call and breaking with 128 years of tradition and becoming the first sport to offer prize money. $50,000 US they're offering for the gold medalists in Paris, which is around 83,000 New Zealand dollars. So one of the benefits of that horrific exchange rate, if you're a New Zealand athlete. So thinking again that track and field is really one of the glamour events at the Games. It's a big draw card for the broadcasters. So if any sport's going to take the leap, it should be athletics. And I wonder now whether the pressure's going to go on some of those other big ticket sports to do the same and start offering prize money. Certainly I can see some of those athlete representative groups now sort of getting involved and seeing if it can move forward in that, or even the IOC potentially mandating a structure of prize money down the track.
So what has been some of the debate around whether this is an affront to the Olympics, as you say? I mean, it's been so long since there was an amateur era for pretty much any of these sports, and yet that idea of the Olympics being for the glory, not the money. What are some of the pushback that's come after this story came out?
Yeah, I guess it's firstly around tradition. As you mentioned, it's kind of grounded in these amateur ideals, and it's always been about really competing for your nation and bringing back medals for your nation. The other argument that's quite interesting that's been raised is whether this will encourage cheating, whether that will further kind of encourage doping and those sorts of behaviours. But World Athletics boss Sebastian Coe has kind of pushed back on that and said no one's out there doing it for the money primarily. It's still, you know, the lure of an Olympic gold medal still holds incredible weight. It's just ensuring that prize money is fairly allocated.
Okay, now what is the Caitlin Clark effect?
Yeah, so if you might have heard the name Caitlin Clark when it comes to US college basketball. So in the past month, we had what they call over there March Madness, which is the NCAA Division I men's and women's basketball tournaments. And for the first time, the men's final drew smaller TV numbers than the women, and that's really been put down to the Caitlin Clark effect and the appeal of Iowa's star point guard. She has just set all these unbelievable records in that league. She's the top all-time scorer of college basketball. And so she's really sort of pulled in the audiences. I think looking at the numbers, the final between South Carolina, who actually won the women's tournament, and Caitlin Clark's Iowa Hawkeyes averaged 18.7 million viewers, and it peaked at around 24.1 million, I think, in the final sort of 15 minutes of the game. The men's final, by comparison, drew 14.8 million viewers. So it wasn't even close. She's really captivated fans all year. She finished the season the highest scoring collegiate basketball player in history. So I think what it really shows around women's sport is that when there is compelling talent and compelling storylines that are promoted, that's the key, being promoted in the league by broadcasters, then they do attract viewers. And, you know, as part of that, ESPN really ramped up its in-game presentation. They had the sort of flashy graphics and high-profile commentators and the deep-level analysis that you expect to see in the men's game. And so that's really sort of had an effect on numbers.
I find this so fascinating because we've seen it before with other sports. I think it was the Women's World Cup final one year that topped, oh gosh, I'm going to have to look up the numbers now, but like the viewing audience was huge. Like, it's been proved time and again that, as you say, with proper marketing, all the storytelling, all the driving of fan interest, that the eyeballs are there. And this is just another example of it, yeah?
Yeah, I think often when we talk about investment in women's sport, it often gets put down at that sort of kind of crude level of paying players. But actually investment is kind of like a 360 thing. It's about not only investing in the actual women's programs and giving them the proper expertise around them in terms of coaching support. It extends right through to how the game is presented, whether the, you know, in terms of broadcast numbers, what slots it's given, what sort of, how many cameras you know, on the court or on the field, and just making it a compelling product. So yeah, I think it really goes to show that when sports do invest at the high level, not just in terms of paying players, it really has it brings its return.
18.7 million, as you said, between this final, the highest audience for any basketball game in ESPN's history. What is it about her as a player? Is it a player or is it her life story? What is it about the package that seems to have so captivated people?
It's her, I think, probably her absolute dominance. She's just, you know, from the outset of her collegiate career, just set all these new records. She, you know, I'm not sure what she averages a game, but even in the final, she...
Is it like watching the highlights? The whole,
yeah,
let's watch the highlights reel.
Yeah.
Which increasingly I do, I have to say.
She shoots threes from absolute miles out. She doesn't just like pull up at the line. It's kind of, yeah, that's
so she's just a wickedly good player.
Yeah, Steph Curry like long shots. Mm. And yeah, incredibly compelling. But I think one thing that's been overlooked in all this is women's college basketball hasn't been without its stars over the years, and possibly there's been a racial element come into play. Many of the previous stars have been women of color. I guess Caitlin Clark has that girl next door appeal, which, yeah, I think that's probably been overlooked in some of it, is that racial element around it.
Oh, the complexity of it all. Mm. And we think closer to home, you think of a breakout star like Ruby Tui as well. Brilliant player, but also, just as we said, bringing all the personality and just bringing the feel-good vibes. There's no doubt these stars are here. But as you say, it's not just about money for games and for training and for allowing them to train like professionals. It is about the whole marketing of the sport. And yet again, it's shown the interest is there. Okay, now, speaking of which, netball's a sport that's had its ups and downs and trying to hold its place in the scheme of things. I don't know if it's still our largest participation sport, primarily for women, but it's ups and downs, isn't it, in terms of its own tournaments and coverage and everything else. What should we be looking forward to with the ANZ Premiership?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the build-up to this weekend's competition has been focused on, I guess, the future of the sport and how things are tracking with that broadcast deal and whether the league is sustainable. But, yeah, I guess putting that all to one side and looking at what we can expect to see out on court this year, the big question is there any team that can challenge the Mystics' dominance? The defending champions are looking really strong once again, so I think the short answer to that is no. Their strength undoubtedly lies in their shooting end, with Grace Nweke dominating the competition last year, and she's since grown on the international stage, remembering, of course, she had that injury during the World Cup, which ruled her out over the second stage of that competition, sat out a lot of those internationals against England and Australia, and then came back on the court against Australia, and it was no coincidence that from then on the Silver Ferns started winning. So, yeah, I don't know if locally we have any defensive answer to Grace Nweke. I think probably the pulse and the tactics are the two teams that can most likely look to challenge the Mystics. So really netball's starting to return to this traditional netball power bases of Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch. I think the pulse, they've got a lot of flair in their lineup. They've got the speed of Maddie Gordon and Whitney Soonis in the midcourt, and then the trickery of Tiana Maturo in their shooting end. and the tactics. They've got probably the most experienced defensive combination with Jane Watson and Cuttenberger. So, certainly I'd put my money on the Mystics to back up again this year, but they do have some sort of threats lurking.
All right. And again, the sport more broadly, the security of the sport's funding and coverage and everything else for this particular tournament, does it get free-to-air coverage, Dana?
Yeah, so this year they the final year on their Sky deal. They're currently in negotiations for 2025 and beyond. But Sky have come to an arrangement with TVNZ where the Saturday afternoon game will be played live on TVNZ. So that, I think, is a really positive development. It opens it up to those free-to-air audiences, which they have been doing through Prime and what they now call Sky Open, but TVNZ obviously have a much bigger viewership. So to be on that platform, I think, is a big bonus for Netball New Zealand, and let's hope they can capitalise on that commercially.
Now, there's been a landmark case, but I think we touched on this a little earlier in the week. A person's been prosecuted for abusing a rugby referee online, but what do you make of the sanction?
Yeah, I think it's a great initiative by World Rugby. It's really about protecting the welfare of its officials and their families. So, the issue of online hate towards officials and players has escalated dramatically in rugby. I think there's about another 5 cases still to come pending. So, I think it's a really positive development.
The sanction, though, what was it, $1,000 and I think some home detention or something along those lines. The problem with the landmark case is that it does set the precedent for everything else, doesn't it?
Yeah, so the man involved, but he wasn't convicted, so he got a $1,000 fine and I think some sort of good behaviour bond or a suspended sentence. So, certainly, I mean, I'm not sure. I guess it will depend from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. This case was obviously tried in Brisbane and you've got to deal with local laws. So, I'm not familiar with in terms of sentencing, where that sits in the scheme of things. But I think that probably is about right. I'm not aware of what was actually said, but for kind of in terms of, making
a threat?
An example.
Oh, an example.
Yeah.
Well, look, when you saw it, I think the World Cup ref said it, that's enough for me, Wayne Barnes, after the abuse they copped last year. And for me, the abuse is bad enough, but the threats are just unacceptable. And, you know, what are, frankly, criminal offences in real life. And the sheer volume of them makes it difficult to follow up on and prosecute. You've got to wonder if the sport and authorities have just got to make some more examples of this, because otherwise, who is going to do it, you know? Seriously.
Yeah. It was quite interesting how they've gone about tracking these people down. I understand they've contracted a digital security company specifically to monitor abuse of referees and match officials. So, and that company has been recontracted by World Rugby. So it's absolutely something they plan to continue doing.
Very good, Dana. Thanks very much. Dana Johansson is RNZ Sports Correspondent.